I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good value, big upside.
DA, first of all, let me just say, you're my absolute favorite show. I listen to them all, but you're the absolute best, my friend.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
40 minutes past the hour. DA with you. Full episodes of The Doc available on iTunes, radio.com, and all other places podcasts are available. Also, go to our website, cbssportsradio.com. Our next guest handles television analysis for the Texas Rangers. He's also on MLB Network Radio, and for a long time, you guys listened to him right here on CBS Sports Radio, our friend CJ Nitkowski. CJ, good morning.
Good morning, DA. Is there another radio program in all of, I guess, maybe all of radio, but certainly sports radio that does better Halloween better than you guys?
You know, we like to own something. We don't own much around here, but we like to own Halloween. So I appreciate you
crushing.
Noticing. Yeah, appreciate you crushing. Noticing. Yeah. Well, this is basically like a bunch of 8-year-olds anyway, hanging out every morning for 4 hours. So
it's a beautiful thing. Some call it work.
Yeah, that's right. Did you think A.J. Hinch made the wrong decision yanking Zach Greinke in the 7th?
It's a tough one. You know, you sit there and you got, obviously it's game 7, and so you're taking that approach of you can't let anybody get in any more trouble at that point, right? After the home run and then the walk, right, which gets a little bit uncharacteristic for Zach Greinke. We saw him lose control a little bit earlier in the postseason, kind of uncharacteristically, but you're trying to always, you want to be that manager that's a move ahead and not a move behind, right? And so at that point in the game, it's certainly not an easy call. In hindsight, it can always be 20-20. I will say this. I know people that are wondering about, you know, third time through the order and, you know, is that a big deal? Because we talk about a lot in our game. Greinke was really good third time through the order this year, just a .205 batting average against. He essentially faced 4 batters third time through the order and then was taken out of the game. As you start to get to the bottom of the lineup, you'd like to think that he would be able to handle it. At the same time, you have some really good arms down there and guys that have done a good job. And I don't know if you caught Howie Kendrick talking about Will Harris and how he had pitched him so far in the postseason and what a difficult time he was having with him. And Will Harris made what looked like a really good pitch. Down and away, cutter. I mean, you couldn't have put it in a better spot. Howie Kendrick saying after the game, I needed something down because I couldn't get to anything up. And it was just kind of almost like an unusual bad luck situation, but also a game plan from a guy who came through. So it's not easy. Hindsight is obviously always 20-20, but I was on the fence. I was leaning, probably get him out of there while you're still ahead by one. But I wasn't all the way in like, hey, you have to make this move. It was a tough call.
At that moment, he said he didn't want to go to Gerrit Cole, wanted him to start a clean inning, and only wanted to use him if they had a lead. What do you think about having those types of restrictions on bringing in your best arm in Gerrit Cole?
Yeah, that one was interesting because we watched him kind of get up and throw a little bit, right? And the fact that I would agree with that. The idea of bringing him in for a clean inning is something you try to do when you put a starter down the bullpen, especially a starter who has not thrown out of the bullpen since he was in college, right? He hasn't done it once in his professional career. And it's tough sometimes coming in the middle of an inning for a starting pitcher, especially with runners on base. So I get the idea of potentially wanting to get him a clean inning. The fact that we didn't see him at all tells me, as I'm watching this game kind of unfold, that possibly he wasn't feeling that great when he threw. Now, it's pure speculation on my part. Or he might have been like, he's okay. It's almost like, you know, when managers go out to have that conversation with a pitcher and they're not actually listening to what he's saying but how he's saying it. Perhaps the bullpen coach didn't love with either what he saw or how Gerrit Cole said that he felt. And they might have been even on the fence. And they may never admit this, but they might have been on the fence on where he was physically. It's the end of October, first time in his career, 2 days rest. Could he dig a little bit deeper? How motivated was he to dig a little bit deeper? I would like to think he was, but at the same time, this guy's headed to a monster payday, and you do have to take care of yourself a little bit. And I'm sure Scott Boras was happy that he probably didn't pitch in that game. But I was surprised, okay, if you say that, then why didn't we see him later? and it's, you start to get to that eighth inning, I mean, you're now, you know, you're going potentially into extra innings. You might not have that chance to pitch with a lead. So I thought it was strange that we didn't see him later, which indicated to me that maybe he wasn't exactly where they wanted him to be.
CJ Nitkowski joins us this morning on the show. You've started games in your career. You were a reliever in your career. What is it about starters needing that clean inning to begin? Is it all just a mental comfort thing?
Well, it's a new level of adrenaline you haven't felt from the get-go, right? I mean, how many starters, Justin Verlander is a good example this postseason, that first inning they got to kind of feel their way out a little bit, and you hope that they get out of it. But at the same time, you know, we've seen some high run totals against some good pitchers early on. And so there's a new level of anxiety when you come in, and eventually you get used to it. When you get thrown into the bullpen as a starter, there's an adjustment period of first understanding the best ways to warm up, right? There is no going out on the field and long tossing 20 minutes before the game and doing your stretching and kind of going at your pace. Phone rings, heart rate's up. You may have to be in the game in, you know, a couple of minutes. That's completely different, obviously, than what starters are used to doing. And some of them, they're, you know, their habits, their creatures of habit. They don't like that routine getting disrupted. So that's part of it as well. But then also having those runners on base. Listen, obviously the pitcher runners on base all the time, but never from the first pitch of the game. And so there's a new little kind of anxiety level that comes along with that as well. And you just try to whenever you can. You can't always do it, but the ideal situation is to go ahead and give a guy a clean inning.
How can you explain the Nationals losing Bryce Harper and doing this? Do you think there's a correlation?
I don't want to think that there is. I mean, because we're left to guess from the outside, right? The idea of, was there any distractions? Was there a chemistry issue? It was interesting, again, listening to Howie Kendrick talk last night about the changes in Steven Strasburg, right? I mean, this is a guy that is kind of quiet, keeps to himself. They joked around about, you know, he doesn't love the hug so much, and they kept kind of making a deal about already come after out of a good start, and there you saw Parra and Sanchez kind of putting the big hug on him, and he seemed to embrace it more. And I think it was a story about a guy in particular that seemed to get more comfortable. And that happened in the middle of the season, right? And that's what they were saying. And kind of this team all of a sudden started to gel. And there was a positive chemistry that happened with this team that carried throughout the postseason. I have a hard time believing that Bryce Harper pulled away from any kind of team chemistry, but it is incredibly ironic that the year he leaves for a guy that wants to win a World Series in the worst way, talks about it all the time, and as soon as he's out of that uniform, not only do they win a World Series, I mean, they even advance in the postseason for the first time. I have a really difficult time putting it on him, but it is pretty amazing at the same time.
Is it possible, it's not even a criticism of Bryce Harper, but instead it's a team that has to figure out a different way to do more with less? I mean, players have to rise to the occasion instead of waiting for the superstar to bail them out of occasions?
Well, I will say this. Yeah, they were a little bit deeper maybe. But at the same time, they also knew that they had a stud in Juan Soto waiting to kind of take over that role as far as your young go-to guy who's going to be getting a majority of the attention. What they had in their rotation was really helpful as well, right? If you can take a $140 million free agent starter and start him, but then also use him out of your bullpen because you have two other studs in front of you, that's really helpful as well. And so they had some of that going. They were deep, right? The idea of spending that money and spreading it out a little bit more and also making really smart moves, but the idea of bringing in Patrick Corbin, obviously, doesn't cost you what it would have cost to keep Bryce Harper, but then there's those other couple of little moves, trading for his Drubal Cabrera, bringing in Daniel Hudson. I mean, they're small moves, but they're more moves, right? And so they did a really good job, I think, of, I always say, I like the idea of hedging my bets as opposed to getting too invested into one player. So I don't know if they were so reliant on him. I mean, certainly the spotlight was on him, but this was a pretty deep team, and it got spread out a little bit more. And, I mean, just playing on the margins. I mean, the entire time. I go back to the wild card game, right? That ball that Soto hit the right field against the Brewers,
yep,
that took kind of a weird hop and got past Trent Grisham. They were down 3-1 with the bases loaded at the time. If that takes a high hop right at him, it's not a guarantee that that second run's necessarily going to score. So I don't use the phrase a team of destiny, but it is a team that seems like, you know, they got the big hits when they needed to. Everything went the right way. It was really close. What, they have 5 elimination games, whatever it was, and they continued to deliver. So that's how close the postseason gets, and that's what we need in our game.
CJ Nitkowski joining us this morning on the show. I have not talked to you since the Game 6 controversy of the Trey Turner play. What was your interpretation of that, and do you think they need to change the rule?
So the rule is right. I believe they nailed it. I went back and forth with Steve Phillips quite a bit, who I work with on MLB Network Radio. He felt the other way. The rule is very clear. At some point, you have to be in the lane. You could come out of the lane to touch the bag, but you got to be in the lane. And because Turner never went in the lane, it's an easy one. You know, it was an easy call, in my opinion. I knew they weren't going to turn it over. It's not reviewable anyway. But the idea, for a lot of times for pitchers, you're taught, and people may not like this, but if you have a really tough play on the line and the runner's out of the runner's lane, hit him with the ball and he'll be out. And it sounds kind of crazy, like, oh, you're not going to hit a guy on purpose, but you might, you know, because you know a good umpire is going to get that call. And so that lane rule probably needs some adjustments, but it is what it is. I'd like to see the lane moved over probably about a foot, because it is unfair to say, especially for right-handed hitters, you have to get in that right lane, which is in foul territory, the 45-foot lane. Then you got to come back and catch the bag. That's, you know, it's not a straight line from the right-hander's batter's box. So they probably need to slide it over a little bit. I also hate the fact, and it's always been the rule, and they were going to call it this way, that all the runners have to go back to where they started. Like, why can't that runner stay on second base? He was going to get there anyway.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of what happened. So we'll see if they address it or not. You know, these kind of things happen in big spots. And they got it right, but I don't love the rule.
So I thought about the Seattle Seahawks last night, because the Seahawks won that first dominant championship, and then their loss against the Patriots kind of haunted them ever since, and they never got back there with that crew. And the Rams were the same way. They won a Super Bowl, then lost to the Patriots in 2001 and never got back. And I look at the Astros, and we kind of assumed they're going to be back quite a bit, and then they're here to win a second one, and they're the huge favorite, and they lose. Do you think this is the type of series loss that can kind of haunt an organization and maybe be in their heads to where they never get back?
I don't know. We'll see. They have some really good players. I know A.J. Hinch talked about how much this really stung, and it's going to sting for a while. And the idea of kind of having this team that was going to be so good for multiple years and maybe get those multiple championships is starting to slip away from them a little bit. But you're going to have Alex Bregman for a long time. You're going to have Jose Altuve for a long time. You know, Justin Verlander signed that extension. Now, if he at some point, which has to happen, right? He's got to go south sooner or later. He's got to slow down. If that happens and Greinke slows down a little bit, Gerrit Cole leaves, then you start to worry. So they'll still be, and I still think they'll be favorites to win the American League West. Next year we'll see. I know the Angels are going to be out there spending some money, and the idea if they can get Gerrit Cole, a reliever, to pair with Shohei Ohtani at the top of the rotation, they're going to be in pretty good shape as well. But I think the Astros very likely will still be the favorites going into 2020. But yeah, I mean, you bring up a really good point. It's tough to win, especially when you have to go through so many series. I don't know if it's necessarily any kind of hangover that brings them down. They do a good job of acquiring talent. They pick the right times to get bold, right? They gave up a ton of prospects to get Greinke, to get Gerrit Cole. That's how they've acquired some of their better players, via trade as opposed to free agency. We'll see if they have enough to be able to do it again, or what kind of money they spend. But obviously nothing is guaranteed in this game. If they were only to win one championship and win a bunch of division titles, then they're going to get probably that Braves tag on them. Of course, 14 division titles and only one World Series.
CJ Nitkowski handles television for the Texas Rangers and MLB Radio on Sirius XM, joining us this morning on the show. CJ, appreciate the time of the insight as always, man. It's been fun to catch up with you this October.
Yeah, absolutely, DA. Always glad to do it.
Be good, man. CJ Nitkowski joining us this morning on the show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.